Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening to Star Lores. If you like the show, please consider subscribing and giving a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also help us make more great content by becoming a patron at www.patreon.com. We would also love to hear from you on social media. You can follow Star Lores on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Enjoy the show, and may the Force be with you.
You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast. I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Millennial Falcon. Today is a very special episode and we have a special guest, but along with me are myself, Jordan, Christian, and Sam, the regular guys. But also, we have...
We're regular on the show. But
we're not regular.
I don't know how Christian's bowels
We're not regular people.
No, Christian's all very regular, very mediocre and average. Okay. So we have Tim with us. Hey, Tim.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So Tim is a, he's an indie filmmaker here in Calgary. Mm-hmm. And he's made a number of award-winning short films, including War is Hell and a couple others. Mm-hmm. And Tim is also one of the co-creators of a viral Star Wars fan film called Rebel Scum.
Yes, indeed.
So I thought it would be pretty cool to, yeah, I thought it'd be pretty cool to have Tim on the podcast to talk about Star Wars and film in general and all that kind of jazz.
Yeah.
So how's it going, Tim?
Good, good. I'm surviving this COVID pandemic. One day people will listen back to this and then it'll be very dated because we're talking about COVID, you know? Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about with COVID. What did we decide it was in galactic epidemiology? I think there's it's the blue wing virus or something.
Yeah, no, I'm doing fine. You know, just
drink your Bactaid and you'll
I'm
be fine.
I'm drinking my Bactaid, nightly dipping in the back to tank, getting That's all healed up. That's what we need is just back to tanks for everyone.
Yes.
Yeah, just take a dip.
A chicken in every pot and a back to tank in every med center.
Yeah,
that's the new 2020 running campaign for whatever office you want, and you'll get it
when you run for the United States.
Yeah,
or the Galactic Empire.
Or the Galactic.
He'll run for Chancellor of the United States and then turn it
Supreme
into an
Chancellor.
Empire.
That's how it goes.
The United States.
Have you guys talked about the Jar Jar Binks theory that
Jar
he's?
Binks.
We're gonna save that for I think an episode where we're gonna talk about like.
That's like your.
Tim's kind of a good person to talk about this sort of thing with because it gets into like the fan fiction universe of Star Wars.
Yeah, it's fan fiction.
Why don't you give us a quick shot of the Darth Binks Star Wars theory?
Well, the theory is that Jar Jar Binks is like was like the Sith Lord behind it all, and like there was and you know how like conspiracy theories go, it just takes a nugget of something to run wild. But there was all of these like, I also got all this information from a YouTube compilation, so I can't verify like how much of this is
it's
true.
It's kind of
but,
good in a way. It's like your brain
isn't
is
that where
the
most
average.
There was like all these clues that George Lucas intended for Jar Jar Binks to be, like what's his name,
Darth Sidious.
No.
Chancellor Palpatine.
No, his name starts with a. It's a P, but yes, I'm not as hardcore of a Star Wars guy as you think I am. You know him, yeah. He's like.
I think I know who you're talking.
What's he look
Saint
like?
Saint Pastage?
No. He's only mentioned. Chancellor.
Or Plagueis.
Yes, Plagueis.
Oh, Darth Plagueis.
So right. It was rumored that Jar Jar Binks is Plagueis. And they the theory is that George Lucas, he intended for Jar Jar Binks to like look like such an idiot because they said, so someone studied Jar Jar Binks' movement and it correlated really closely to like a form of like wushu or like some.
Yeah, it was almost like drunken master.
Yeah, like drunken master stuff. Yeah. And the theory was because George Lucas is so much into like Buddhism and, you know, Taoism. So the theory was that Jar Jar Binks was like this drunken Sith Lord master and it would be revealed that he would be the Sith Lord.
In our episode one review, I did do a quick Jar Jar kill count in the Battle of Naboo and he did get. I think I counted 5 kills.
Or he should have died.
In very quick succession.
Oh, where he killed
things. He killed like 5 droids. Yeah. Quote unquote, by accident.
So he.
By using that sort of drunken style. Yeah. Kung
so
fu.
He's like the drunken Sith Lord Master. But because of how episode one was received so poorly and people just hated Jar Jar Binks, like they say that George Lucas had to completely go in a different direction because people just wouldn't take his work seriously anymore if Jar Jar Binks came out as a Sith Lord. So
I think it would have been a better redemption for Jar Jar than to just be like an incompetent senator.
Yeah. I was really hoping in this, the reboot or the new trilogy, they would have revealed Binks.
I was actually thinking how bad Jar Jar was because isn't he the one who like introduced the bill to make Palpatine chancellor?
That's also part of the theory is that
Jar Jar is ultimately the person who's
pulling the strings,
politically directly responsible.
But even if he isn't Darth Jar Jar, he's still a bad person in my opinion.
Yeah, like he just happened to stumble across these 2 Jedis on Naboo, right? Like he's getting in with them.
We all
he's
know there's close. No coincidences in Star Wars.
Yeah, it's all there, you know. I just have to look.
You gotta connect the dots, man. It's like any good conspiracy theory is this string of vaguely correlated events you found on a YouTube video and you're like, it all makes sense.
And then the moment where you're actually convinced. I think that's the best part of conspiracy theories because something changed inside of you where you're like, I believe now. Yeah. You know,
some part of you died.
Some part of you died. Something was birthed.
You know, you can get to that place if you get a divorce or a DUI. It's also the same sort of place psychologically where you start turning that corner.
Really?
Yeah. I've also thought about in some of the Star Wars comics, there was like, bad guys who are sort of disinformation agents on the side of the Empire immediately after Palpatine's death. And they were sort of espousing conspiracy theorists but it was very clear that they were depicting them like the sort of David Icke reptilians are controlling the US government. That it's like, this was the type of conspiracy these Imperial guys were telling about the Jedi and the Republic, right? Like the Republic is controlled by these space wizards with laser swords who can
sacrifice babies and secret temples. It's a good thing we exterminated them.
So I do wonder what the space Alex Jones looks like. What species do you think Alex Jones would be? Would he be like?
He's like Boss Nass. He's a Gungan.
I'm also thinking though, is it Rax? He's the guy from, I think he's first introduced in episode 2. He's got 4 arms and he's like green.
Dexter Jetster.
Is it Dexter Jetster?
He's not green. He's like a blue color, but yeah.
But the 4 arms.
Obi-Wan.
Yes. I feel like he's a good Alex Jones body type. Because Alex Jones is like big, right? But he's no, he's powerful though. Like he's not.
He has power.
You wouldn't want to mess with him.
It's his voice too. Yeah. So
he definitely doesn't look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. But
yeah.
So Tim, Rebel Scum. What inspired you to make that short film?
Well, Rebel Scum. We knew that they were like. Not like rebooting, but they were coming out with this whole new trilogy. So there's lots of Star Wars hype.
Sorry, what year did it come out?
Did Rebel Scum come out?
Rebel Scum came out in 2015, if I remember correctly. No, 2016, I think.
It was before the prequels started coming, yeah. Or the sequels started coming out, right?
Yeah. So they, so we were kind of like, what is it here? Yeah, it was Force Awakens. I think that came out in 2015. So, we knew that that was coming out. There was lots of Star Wars hype around like remaking the trilogy. So, we kind
and
of
there's a lot of nostalgia hype too around it because they were bringing back the classic characters and all that as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like people were going to see Leia again, Han Solo. So people are excited. People are probably going back watching Star Wars. It's kind of this new era. So
I definitely like as soon as the announcement hit, basically, I started reading all the Star Wars Legends novels again. And like read Plagueis. That was the first one I got back into immediately after that.
So yeah. I people are like probably running.
Fell victim to the nostalgia baiting. That,
yeah. Like how many people probably did so Star Wars marathons leading up to The Force Awakens.
Oh yeah.
So we were like knew this wave was coming. So we kind of wanted to, we're kind of like being a little bit predictive and being like, there's probably going to be a lot of buzz online about anything Star Wars. So if we put out a Star Wars fan film right now, it might like get good response and kind of go viral a bit. Also, like we wanted to do one, another reason why we wanted to do Rebel Scum is it's set in Hoth, and we were like, what's not in the market right now? Everything is like a fan film about a Jedi in a forest because that's pretty.
Or a desert.
Or a desert, yeah. Something that like, you know, is close by and doesn't take a whole lot to do. So we just wanted to do, and also we didn't want to do something about a Jedi. We wanted to do a film that was just about the smaller players in, you know, the Star Wars universe.
But you didn't just pick Star Wars because it was like socially relevant. Like you have a history with Star Wars personally.
Yes,
right?
For sure. Yeah.
You grew up watching the movies and
yeah.
Tim and I, we've been friends for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the Star Wars nerd cred is what Christian's asking.
Yeah. Are you just capitalizing on innocent Star Wars fans?
Are you a poser?
I'm not some director that Disney just hired who knows nothing about Star Wars. No, yeah, like we were deeply rooted, steeped in the Star Wars culture and history. We would just like read all the books, novels. One thing I really loved was just like reading those. They would have like these books that have just like data diagrams of like blasters. And
it was the essential guide.
Yes, books. The essential guide books. And they had that for everything, species. And so that was like really fun to do as a kid. So this was like, it's kind of a dream come true to actually like just make a Star Wars movie. And to have it actually like kind of received like by the Star Wars like audience out there. And when we put it out there, we were kind of, it's scary to like release something Star Wars and then, you know, the fans will just like eat it up if it's not there, you know, or accurate or whatnot. But it was pretty well received and grateful for the.
Is there like a Star Wars like. Because you kind of had, were you like trying to match the Star Wars filmmaking style of like the original?
Yes.
Trilogy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like how would you do that?
So I kind of rewatched the trilogy again and I studied like the camera work. Things that like people might not think makes it Star Wars, but that do. So a lot of Star Wars was filmed on sticks or they called tripods, right? Because it was in the old days, they had really heavy cameras, nothing was handheld, so everything was like static. So a lot of things are just like long shots, and what I love about the long shots, you just absorb all that, the costumes, their setting, and that's another thing that really makes Star Wars is just the setting, that far, far away galaxy. So we applied those techniques to Rebel Scum. We also like the camera and kind of the color grading. We really tried to mimic it as close to the originals.
I was going
to
ask, did you shoot on film or digital?
No. It would have been.
You weren't that hardcore. You didn't get a 90 pound.
The environment we filmed it in was just so hostile that Christian was also there for that.
Yeah,
so
it's just Iceland.
It's
not bad. It was remoter.
The Columbia ice fields.
Yeah. It was very cold. So we, if we did shoot on film, we couldn't risk.
I think on the coldest days, what did it hit minus 30?
Yeah,
did it get
was,
that cold?
Yeah, the coldest days, it was minus 30. Plus Celsius, there's wind chill. It was like on a, like a mountain glacier. So
yeah,
like we had fresh wind chill coming down and It was like,
yeah,
pretty,
and we had,
pretty
you had to like walk through, trudge through snow with all the gear and everything mm-hmm. to get to the spot you actually wanted to shoot. Mm-hmm. It's funny because just reading the YouTube comments, you should never read the YouTube comments, but reading the YouTube comments, there are so many people who don't believe that you shot on location.
I know they, people it's like green screens.
Like, it's hilarious. They're like, yeah. there's no, you can't see the mist or steam coming out of their mouth.
Can't see their breath. And you know.
Like they were so adamant yeah. that we did not shoot on location. It's and that's so something funny. You stress is that like, yeah, we actually yeah. went to a snowfield.
We even
and,
have
like,
literal behind the scene pictures on our website.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
People just refuse to believe.
Yeah.
I just found it so funny.
That is hilarious. That is hilarious, actually. But it's funny. Like, we've all been to that location. If you live in Calgary, most people have been to that location, right? It's
the
not
funny
like,
thing is those are also the same commenters who are commenting on the moon landing videos.
Probably, and going, that's fake. That was done in a studio. Yeah.
I know what Buzz Aldrin feels like now. I've been there. I've seen it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I like the people who matter. They get it and they can like the comments I get where people kind of see another thing too, that people didn't understand was like they looked at the animation of like the probe droid or the AT-AT and they're like, oh man, that like CGI is awful, you know, that looks so bad, but we did real stop motion with like real models and we purposely
not CGI
yeah. made it look clunky because we wanted it to mimic
it looked original
and people loved it. They were like, that's literally like from the movie, you know, like how it's moving. And so
it was actually your guys's brother Jordan and Sam's brother did the motion capture, or not the motion capture, the stop motion.
That's right.
For it.
There's a blood tie here. Oh, so me and Josiah worked on it for maybe, I don't know.
Just the stop motion animation segment.
Yeah, that took like, Josiah would know better, but maybe like 6 months just in a garage. And
for what, like 30 seconds of footage?
Yeah, there's not that much footage.
It was, but we had to go in, we went a whole extra mile. So there's like a video on our YouTube channel that explains how we did the stop motion, because it wasn't just stop motion. We like Josiah built this technology is like just becoming like popular now, but Josiah, like, I don't want to say he thought of it first because that would be crazy, but his idea was like, let's build like a light box and project like photographs, like a 360 photograph that we took on the day when we were filming there. And then the ATST miniature is in the light box. Sorry, AT-AT is in the light box. Yeah, the ATA-ATA. And then we project the images onto the light box, and then it gives like an accurate lighting. So it's not just like we're trying to mimic lighting, it's the identical lighting to the day we were filming. So in order to get that with the stop motion, we had to like do it twice, the animation twice. Oh, and man. We decided to like do the stop motion in a really... We did like extra frames than was required, so it took like double the time.
Let me just be the first to say that I don't believe you did any of that. None of it is real.
Yeah, show me some documentation.
I couldn't see the breath on the AT-AT.
Another thing I kind of noted, which I thought was made it almost distinct from a lot of other Star Wars fan films, is actually the lack of dialogue in a good way. That existed. Was there like a reason for that, or you just didn't want to? It's kind of hard to get like really good actors who can who can do dialogue well on film, or was it like creative limitations, or was it you actually intended to do that?
Yeah, there was like two things. One was creative limitations. So my older brother Paul, he's like a screenwriter. He wasn't very so much available at this time to help me on this project. So I am like a writer, but I wouldn't say like writing dialogue is like my strength. Like I'm more so directing and, you know, on the post-production side of things. So all of the short films I've made have very little dialogue, but so much of like communication is nonverbal anyways, right? Like you pick up so much. So that's what I like to do with actors, is that you can you're communicating just in a completely different level with the audience. And yeah, that's like something else that some people commented too. It's like, this actually, there's like literally no lines, but it was like still well done. Also, I just thought like it's in a survival situation. Like he's also alone. Who's he going to talk to other than the snow trooper? But yeah.
It seems like it would be a tall order creatively to try to write dialogue for a Star Wars film as well.
People do it though.
I know they do, but I just feel like there's
and they do it way too much.
Yeah. there's just no winning.
Yeah. It's kind of a crutch too, because anytime in a film something is compensating, it's because they weren't able to like do something else really well necessarily. And I don't want to like hate on. I think genuinely like
there are some other decent fan films.
Yeah, like, yeah.
But a lot of them, the most egregious thing I find in a lot of Star Wars fan films is the dialogue. Mm. And it's just like people who are kind of weak actors, right? And yeah. And so it's
and I don't know the Star Wars fan films scene that well, but is there a sense that it's like a lot of that dialogue is also just exposition?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't even need to be
in
the first place.
Yeah. That's a big problem when people like try to write. They don't think of subtext. They don't think of like all that stuff. They tell the news. They don't like tell a story. So it's like,
yeah.
Oh, we got to go to here because we got to do this. And you know, and then, oh my God, you're my father.
Sounds just like the sequel trilogy, to be honest. Exposition dump dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that's where, so for example, like in like a case could have been in even one of the newer trilogy is that they shot something and then they edited it and they were like, this makes absolutely no sense. We need to go back and reshoot this scene and add in some exposition to explain.
I really felt like sort of as a writer, anybody watching the Star Wars sequel trilogy, you could really see the seams. And yeah. It's like, this is not quite fitting together properly.
Yeah. There's some bad flaws.
It's like boom mics constantly coming into frame or something. It's just like, ooh.
Yeah, it's like a Monty Python film or something. But not on purpose.
That'd actually be funny to see a Star Wars version of Monty Python. Yeah.
That would be great. So like, I'm just curious, is there anything in terms of filming specifically like the Star Wars genre as opposed to any other film, is there like a specific challenge that it presented as opposed to, you know, War is Hell or any of your other films?
I think films just period are can be really challenging depending on what it is. A lot of our films are like historical or, you know, in like we don't do like a film where it's like, you know, two people in a coffee shop or like in an apartment. We want to kind of give people an elevated experience, more like high concept content. Obviously we can't do it on a massive budget, so we try to like kind of make our sandbox and just play in it but do the story really well. So Star Wars, you really like got to try to nail down I think the costumes really well, because there's a lot of like cosplay stuff out there, but you can tell when like something is not lived in, you know.
I definitely wanted to ask about the costumes, yeah, which looked very good. And of course, the costumes are huge.
Yeah, the costumes were probably one of the best things of the film. They look so legit. Yeah. Where'd you get them?
Yeah, and that's so, like the same thing for all the Star Wars, right? Is that but then there's a second layer that I really appreciate about the Star Wars costumes that like Bossk's outfit, I think, was just a random repurposed pilot costume from another film on the lot. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of weird stuff like that. Are there any...
All the guns are World War II guns. That exactly. <That's right. laughs>
So are there any funny stories like that with how you did your costumes? Because I imagine you actually sourced it. You didn't just get some cosplaying kit off eBay.
So the...
Or Etsy, I suppose.
So the binoculars I built myself. So our younger brother, Daniel, he's like a production designer that he does a lot in costumes and props, but he wasn't here with us. So I've worked with him on quite a few of our projects. And so I kind of had the technique down. So I built the binoculars myself. The helmet was a kit that they're probably the most well-known like guys who build, like helmets for Rebels or Imperials, like they build for like the 501st, right? The group.
Yeah, the 501st is the costume club.
Yeah, but they're like,
and this
they're
is like a legit. Cosplay.
They're not like just
company.
Some cosplay people. They're like, they're pretty.
They get pretty bang on with like movie.
Yeah, it has
references.
To be absolutely screen accurate. So they're, and then the snowtrooper costume was a 501st member who donated his precious, precious. And they're really rare snowtrooper costumes.
And they're probably expensive.
It's very expensive to put together. So he, man, he was such a saint.
He was a snowtrooper, right?
Snowtrooper, yeah. Right. Yeah. Everyone does like stormtroopers, but snowtroopers are pretty rare.
You know, Dengar?
Yes.
The bounty hunter? His, also another costume story, is that the reason he has the costume he does is it was just another random thing left over. They didn't know what to put him in. They're like, put a coat of gray spray paint on it. And then, of course, in the backstory, Dengar was like an Imperial sniper and had this grudge against the Empire.
Yeah, just goes crazy. So, yeah, that costume, it was like we were getting really close to our date when we were starting to roll the camera and we did not have a snowtrooper costume. So I was like madly on like Star Wars forums in Alberta, and I was like, yo, like, does anyone have a snowtrooper costume? And he, the owner, like, messaged me. He's like, yeah, I think I could loan it to you guys for like the shoot. And he came out on the shoot too. And we also broke his costume like many times because it was so cold.
Oh,
he was such a saint. He would like fix it, and he even like gave us, he had like multiple blasters, and he was like gave us like a one to throw around and like a more screen accurate one. And so the movie would not have been possible without him. So that was like a big thing. Yeah,
that's sort of like an interesting dynamic of even being kind of an indie filmmaker, right? Mm-hmm. Is you really have to scrap to get all the stuff you need, especially in terms of props, and especially if you're trying to do a brand that's already very established.
Yeah,
you know, you want to
so
try
recognizable.
And be.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it really takes a lot of effort and drive to do that. So kudos. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anyone else want?
just on the music front. At some point, I want to do a special on music and Star Wars, but
that'd be fun.
The music that you chose—did you choose all the music for?
Yes.
For Rebel Scum, you want to talk a little bit about what your choices were and why? And
So it was Gustav Holst is a composer, and he has like his most well-known orchestration is The Planets. You might recognize it from Gladiator. Yeah. You know that like you know like. It's a famous Gladiator bit. They got sued because they didn't actually like try to get licensing. He just
is it not in the public Zimmer domain? Made it.
No, but the orchestration rights still is in public domain, I believe. Yeah. So, anyways, they tried to sneak one past whoever owns the rights to The Planets, So you asked when did this idea come from? I heard one of Gustav Holst's songs on the radio, and I was like, this sounds a lot like Star Wars, but it's not Star Wars. And then I was like, why not make a Star Wars film? Okay, another thing that sets...
It's all like dominoes.
Yeah, yeah. Another thing that sets like Star Wars films apart is the music too. Because nothing that John Williams score, it's just so Star Wars. You need that grand orchestration. So I was like fortunate to have heard The Planet and then try to pair that together with like our version of a Star Wars film. So it sounds that I think really helped sell the Star Wars feel too, was the music that we used. And we just paid for like the orchestration rights or the recording, you know.
Yeah.
For it, yeah.
You like licensed it.
Yeah, yeah. So we could actually use Star Wars the music, and we didn't have to like, because that's another thing that kind of is really tough, is that when you're on a really low budget, people like try to do the music themselves, you can't beat like a full orchestra, the real sound. It's really tough. So,
So the music itself almost inspired the entire film.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
It's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there any other like lore or mythos that you really drew upon in that film specifically? Like what was kind of your inspiration specifically within the Star Wars universe? What was your inspiration for that film?
Yeah. It's when you watch Empire Strikes Back and you see like the rebels leaving and you know that there's like a group of rebels who stayed behind to let them go. That's like such a cool story, I think. Like, you know, the man who is left behind.
There's a Marvel Star Wars
story
okay.
in the comic books where that's what happened to Wedge Antilles immediately after Hoth was he got stuck letting people go. And so there's like this sort of survival story
nice.
Of, like him versus the elements and then him versus some space pirates.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Pays off that premise. But it's a great example of how many moments there are in the Star Wars universe and like how alive it is, because you can automatically make like 700 great stories just from that premise of the guys who stayed behind on Hoth, right?
And that happens a lot, right? Like they talk about the Death Star plans. I made a whole movie on that. You know, you talk about the Bothan spies. Hopefully maybe we'll see something come of that, right?
But yeah.
These throwaway lines turn into these like...
nether rot.
That's what happened. Yeah. But you can take these little snapshots and like build such a big story on just like a throwaway line, essentially.
Yeah.
But tell us more about your inspiration on that front. Like why...
Yeah.
It was just the environment. Like, okay, we'll do Hoth.
Hoth was cool. I always, you know, thought about those poor souls who
got left behind,
lost their lives to the Empire.
Terrorists that were justifiably
those rebels. I don't know. We built it off the line to Rebel Scum, and we thought it'd be like interesting to tell a story why it is the Imperial's viewpoint of why these guys are so dirty, right? Because maybe some of them are really dirty, you know, are like if you
dirty fighters.
I won't spoil the film, but if you watch it, you'll kind of see why. Like, it lives up to its name, Rebel Scum.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of a story of like basically a soldier who, you know, was left behind in a war and is trying to get home. I mean, it's not like that story has never been told before. It's just completely original because it's not.
But it is cool because you're sort of. You're meshing almost like a war film and a Star Wars within like the Star Wars universe, which I think is
that's another reason why I love Rogue One. Yeah,
but you did it first.
Yeah.
They probably stole the idea from you.
Well, there was what's the one in between The Last Jedi? No. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Last Jedi.
Those were not stop motion AT-ATs.
No, they were not. But there's a line where, who's the that stormtrooper general in Chrome?
Phasma. Oh yeah, Captain Phasma. Captain Phasma.
Captain Phasma. So there's a line where, they use that line Rebel Scum a lot in that movie.
And then there's a line, I don't even remember that.
Yeah, there's a line where before she's killed.
It's one of the more cringy parts in the movie.
Yeah, it's a kind of a cringy.
The way they use it is cringy, but they're obviously trying to lampoon off of like I don't know if lampoon's the right word, but like mirror the use of the term rebel scum, which does come up in the original trilogy.
Yeah, exactly, and that's kind of what we built our short film off of. And then there's a line where she like her helmet's off, and then she says to Finn, "Like you rebel scum," but it was almost like a mirrored exactly from our short film.
So right. You're saying
the moment, but yeah, you know,
Ryan Johnson watched your film. And he's like lifting.
Well,
hey, they stole enough from everything else. Why not?
also dip into the fan fiction universe.
Honestly, I would not be surprised if they like pull content from what's out there, you know?
Interestingly enough, the current, it's kind of like a side note, the current Marvel comics have been caught stealing fan built digital models. And just using them in their comic books instead of actually putting art out. It's actually really interesting. So they have been actually like, I mean, legally, I don't know, because, you know, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they're really.
This is already our content in the first place.
Right, exactly. So. But there is a precedent. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, honestly, like, since Kathleen Kennedy said that. She said specifically that we're not taking any story beats from previous extended universe materials. No comics, no novels. We're making it all up.
She said specifically they didn't have any content.
And when like literally one of the title characters from your movie, Ben Solo, you just changed his last name because Luke's kid was named Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just cue the Mari meme. And that was a lie. Nothing surprises me about their writing process.
And even to that point, right? Like there's a lot of production people on a Star Wars film, mm-hmm. right? Someone could have just said, hey, it may not have even been
this thing,
the director, right? YouTube, it was just he's like, hey, let's do this little thing and put it in there, mm-hmm. right? And the director is like, okay. You know, that production person could have easily seen your film. And your film, I think, has over 2 million views right now, you know, so it's not like it would be that hard to find.
Once this thing drops, it's going to be like 2 million and one views.
Oh, boy.
But it kind of interesting. Some more conspiracy theories. Did
was it Darth Binks? Darth Mickey?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Tell us about the actors.
So, is this fine if I share it?
You're not, like,
protecting her identity?
Yeah.
Okay. So Christian was...
I don't know what is about to be revealed, but there are some very knowing, intimate looks.
Oh, that's
exchange. The truth is, Christian played the female
Stormtrooper.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. That makeup is the makeup artist is a genius.
Yeah.
Wow.
Set.
And he still had his beard on, so that was all like prosthetics.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. No, the two actors we had, Andre and Annie, and they were really great. Annie is Christian's now wife. But they met for the first time on our set, and they
That's
fell in
not
love.
True.
I performed
that
the marriage.
That is not true.
She was full.
He officiated the wedding.
Did you do it in Jedi regalia?
Yes.
We identify as Jedi.
Yeah, it was great to work with them. I think a lot of our projects, again, with just high concept content, it kind of drives the bar a little bit higher than normal. Like, it's not just... like I said, not just in a coffee shop comfortably.
That's part of your elevator pitch, right? It's like,
yeah.
We really drive the bar a little bit higher than normal.
So it's set, you know, it's on an ice field. It was minus 30. She was sitting in on ice for like, I don't know, 10, 12 hours, like just completely in that position. And when she got up, like the ice was just completely frozen over her pants, like it was just falling off in chunks. They were stiff, like if you had like a pair of pants and you like got them wet and you threw them outside and they would just stand up, like that's what they were like when she got out of costume.
Did it ever become like sort of you had the thought maybe this is medically becoming a little bit dangerous, somebody could get
I think she was close to like hypothermia probably. She was like, it really suffered a lot. But she did an incredible job too, I must say.
That's what makes good art, is suffering.
It's pain. That's right.
I was going to say, are you like that German director who made Werner Herzog? He made the movie about the
steamboat.
About the steamboat,
yeah,
right?
That's crazy.
And he held his actors there at gunpoint. Is that your style? Klaus Kinski, I think? Or was that the actor?
No, Werner Herzog. Yeah.
Was it Werner Herzog?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you hold them at gunpoint? Is what I'm asking to get her to do
at
that.
At a blaster point. That's
Herzog, blaster point.
Yeah. Incidentally, acts in The Mandalorian too. All comes full circle.
The acquisition.
Yeah.
It actually, in a weird way, it almost adds like a dynamic to the acting, right? Because the conditions are so harsh, you're actually almost not even acting.
Yeah.
You know, when you have to have that distress.
Live suffering.
Yeah.
It's like live leaks, just raw pain.
Are you a Sith Lord? Maybe.
I say that's kind of cheating if you rely on that as an actor, though.
It helps, though, you know.
If it's real trauma, that doesn't count. You're not acting. That's why they call it acting.
So like
you're cheating if you are traumatized.
Jordan and Christian, they've all been in my films. There's a legendary one that we did about the Lord of the Rings. So that might pique some of your fans' interest, which is not released, but
I don't know if anyone will ever discover that.
But Jordan was Legolas and Christian was Halfier for a brief moment. But you didn't really have the suffering too much. But Jordan, he literally was on production for an entire year. We had some pretty
was it
bad,
that long?
Yeah, we filmed for a whole year.
It was long,
every weekend for a year.
They took a whole year of his life.
We did. We sapped it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, you know, it was fun. It was like a good learning experience. I almost wish I took more advantage to learn stuff while I was there, but whatever. Hindsight's 2020. is there?
Well, I admit too, there was some bad days. Like, yeah. Yeah. Like you look back and you only remember like the good stuff anyways. So
Yeah. It's one of those things where even though like it's almost like you're almost proud of it because it was hard.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, the reason people like run marathons and stuff, it's just
the payoff.
Yeah. The payoff of doing something hard.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I had a question here. From like a filmmaking perspective, is there, of all the Star Wars films that have been released, is there one that like, just from in terms of the art of filmmaking, is there one that like sticks out to you?
Empire Strikes Back is like my favorite of all time. And I think that one, it's good because it kind of, I don't know, it gets dark and things get really interesting. Stakes are raised, you know. Yeah, you have that awesome cliffhanger moment at the end when Luke finds out his origin. And yeah, I don't know. Also, like George Lucas, there's a very old interview, but he said that he built Star Wars. He only wanted to do the first one. This is not old Luke, because this is like young. I'm full of ideas and hope.
Not jaded and billionaire.
So he just wanted to make Star Wars to set the premise, set the stage. He just aliens, has
a single hope. And one it's hope. New.
Yeah, and it was new.
It's a novel hope.
Yeah. So he did that. And then, but his whole desire was to like let other directors make other Star Wars movies to see their interpretation. Because he was like, maybe someone can do Star Wars better than I could. So you see that in like... Empire Strikes Back, and I even really like Return of the Jedi. Yeah.
Have you heard the story of George Lucas trying to hire David Lynch to direct The Empire Strikes Back?
I don't know all the details, but
that would have been
insane.
Amazing to see the David Lynch
version.
Yeah. Sure. Darth Vader just melts into a clock at the end and falls off.
Who was it that ended up directing Empire?
I can't remember.
Man, he leaves such a mark on the Star Wars universe and no one even remembers his name. The unknown hero.
He's
Yeah, it's like the best Star Wars film, pretty much.
Interestingly,
Irvin Kushner.
Yeah, he's like he's done some fairly big name movies, although none come to mind because I'm not that much of a film buff. David Lynch did then direct, I think it was even maybe later that year, the first Dune movie. Which
was kind of a failure, though.
It was a failure, but it's interesting. That's another cool tie-in to Star Wars, is the first Dune movie that was made by a Spanish filmmaker called something Jodorowsky, and there's Jodorowsky's Dune. It's a documentary about it. But the first Dune, basically all the guys who worked in special effects and creature effects and wardrobing and stuff, a lot of them worked on Jodorowsky's Dune, and then they just, their next gig was working on Star Wars. But because Jodorowsky's never actually went into production, they just took a whole bunch of the sets and costumes and stuff from Dune initially, which is also super interesting because Dune is sort of has put a signature into the Star Wars franchise.
Yeah. Do you have, is there anything that you would like to see in like the future Star Wars films in terms of like storytelling or filmmaking?
That's a big question because I don't know.
Is there like a return to or something new you would like to see?
I would like to see... This is like why fans are so divided on all. Some people love the new stuff. Some people don't, because some people, they just want like, give me what's familiar, you know. But also, I think you have to tell a new story, but I would do it in like still a familiar way, in a setting that people like, you know. I really value that kind of dystopian future where everything's falling apart. And I love that the Millennium Falcon is just in pieces. And it's just, it's a real like, I don't know. I think the new stuff is kind of just, it's, very flashy. Also, though, what's funny is, like, I remember not liking necessarily episode one, and I was hating on it and Phantom Menace. And then now I have a sense of nostalgia for it, weirdly, you know, like there's scenes that
So what do you kind of feel about, like, the sequels, the prequels, and the original trilogy? Like, how would you kind of rank them, for lack of a better word? You don't have to do, like, you know, you could just say, like, obviously, if you said Empire's your favorite, you probably have greater ties to the original trilogy.
What's your favorite prequel?
I think I would say Rogue One, and not
you didn't even go that far back.
Okay, if we're talking about, like, movies that are...
I zig and you zag.
Sorry, you said, okay, prequel, like... Before.
Okay. That's how I'm going to play.
Hold on. Let's say, Christian's original question was, like, of the three trilogies, how would you rank them?
Of the three trilogies. Okay. So trilogy by trilogy. Okay. Yeah. So, oh man. Okay. That's because there's some bad ones in the prequels. Okay. Clearly the originals first. You know what? I would have to say the new ones are second and then the prequels, because... You know, Attack of the Clones, and I did like
Revenge of the Sith,
though. Yeah. So I don't know. There's good qualities in the ones.
But you seem to be, like, all in all, you're part probably in the OG crew, original trilogy crew. Yeah. Like, that is Star Wars to you. I remember you guys were really into the Legends stuff even back then. Like, you knew, you know, who Mara Jade was. You knew about Thrawn. You knew about all these, like, stories as they were coming out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like you said, that's the kind of stories you're familiar with, that falling apart, worn out galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's a cool, like, it's a lived in world. And when things are, that's what kind of makes it very believable, because real life is grimy and gritty like that. Yeah, I don't know. There's glimmers in the sequels that I do appreciate and I value. But like we're talking about, there was some really tragic storytelling and writing and just literal, like, disasters that Disney was, like, trying to fix. Because it's a tent pole movie, you know, like, they have to put
every single one, I think, fell into that production hell limbo of whenever productions change hands.
Yeah, it's disastrous.
Whenever directors or writers change hands mid-production, you know, there's, like, no saving that film, basically. Yeah,
they went through so many directors, too. Like, it's so hard. You have to let him kind of do his vision. So, like, J.J. Abrams was kind of, like, their repairman, where he's just, like, needing to fix
Colin
it.
From Colin Trevorrow, who is supposed to do that.
Yeah, who was first supposed to do it? Was it J.J. Abrams?
No, it was Trevorrow, right?
Like...
He was originally supposed to do Rise of Skywalker, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So JJ was the fix-it man to clean up that mess, and even JJ couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And JJ made his own mess, too, some might argue.
And they needed to make it very broad, because they have to appeal to such a big market, so they're trying to shove in everything and anything just to, like, please everyone. Like, fans, new fans... People who have special interests, so
it's literally putting shiny things in to get the toddlers, like Captain Phasma. I've never seen a more clear, like, native product placement in my life. It's like,
well, I thought the craziest one, most obvious one, was what do you call it, Last Jedi, with the little Porgs. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was just like, okay, that's clearly supposed to be like a toy.
Yeah. There's like a huge, so when they're structuring film financing, a major component is, it's like ancillary, I think.
Yeah.
I might not be saying the word
ancillary.
Right. Ancillary, yeah. Deals where, like, they'll get a massive amount of cash if they can make toys.
They need
so
all
So like
this
they're literally, they take into all their marketing into account,
and you can't
sales
unfortunately
into account.
Put a Coke can in, like, a ghost Mary Poppins hand in her deep fake have her deep fake drink a Pepsi. Wouldn't make sense in Star Wars unless you wrote it in Ourobesh.
Well, and on that note too, so I was just doing I got some Lego for my nephew for his birthday. I got him some Star Wars Lego, and even just looking in the aisle, I'm telling you, man, like 80 to 90% of it was all the old stuff. And like almost no new, like new Star Wars merchandise from like the new stuff. The only one in the Lego section that I saw that was new Star Wars was the Mandalorian and the baby or the child.
Interesting.
Yeah, and like everything else was like all from the original, and there was one from Obi-Wan and Anakin Lego set. But I just thought it was like, and I've noticed that quite a bit looking at like they can't even sell the merch from like, at least not the toys and the Lego. It seems like everyone just wants all the original toys and Lego still.
I do know a kid about our nephew's age though, who does have a whole bunch of the whole new
Disney canon. I'm sure there is.
I'm not sure how representative they are of
I'm just saying anecdotally.
It would be interesting though if they just had warehouses full of Kylo Rens that nobody wants.
Yeah.
A whole clone army.
Yeah. maybe Disney should just do like a new Toy Story movie that's just with Star Wars action figures.
So would you ever do another Star Wars project if you it like I don't know who knows what the future would hold? Maybe you got a bunch of money for it, or would you ever do it, or just as a passion project would you ever
I think I would do maybe the sequel to Rebel Scum, because a lot of people people have written stories about what happened afterwards. Like
I'd love to read some of that.
Yeah, people were like emailing us and being asking for permission, and they wrote all this, the backstory of what happens, and it's pretty cool. Like people, like that's what's kind of cool, is like they've actually absorbed it as canon for some people. Like they see this rebel pilot as a real character in Star Wars, or this the snowtrooper. So it would, I think it'd be cool to explore like his, what happens to him. Does he join the Empire? Does he go home? Does he join the rebellion again?
Yeah, that's kind of a cool, like even like a fan film breeding even more fan fiction, right?
Yeah.
Because the fan film itself is a form of fan fiction that you created.
Like say hypothetically, if it created like a fan podcast and the hypothetical listeners to that podcast then like listen to it and
send fan fiction about you guys,
send fan fiction where I'm Han Furry Solo art. Jordan's not Han Solo. I'm supposed to be flying the Millennium Falcon. So, I came up with the name just hypothetically.
So in this Millennium Falcon, what are the roles? Who's Han, who's Chewie?
Well, technically I guess we have photographic evidence that Jordan's Han, so
I just put whatever picture fit with the thing. This image doesn't even come out yet, but it's going to be a promotional piece that's coming out. Nice. Someone's a little bit burned, a little bit chafed about it, it sounds like.
Yeah.
It's a, hypothetically, also, that is. It's, not it's me.
The Millennial Falcon.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Just so
I really hope there's a large contingent of people who've like listened to every episode and thought that we were saying the Millennium Falcon the whole time, and we just blew their mind.
Millennial Falcon.
No, it's the Millennial Falcon.
Yeah.
There's your merch right there.
Yeah.
There's your branding.
Actually.
Yeah. It would be cool to do another one, I think.
Yeah.
I also bought this.
What if hypothetically somebody who did a fan podcast hypothetically talk to a guy who
had a lot of money,
hypothetically swords and stuff, and he's hypothetically making like a character from the Tales of the Jedi their actual sword, and hypothetically I might have that soon. And
that is like
a Tales of the Jedi fan film.
It's like every cosplayer's dream to be like, because they're already dancing,
have their stuff
in a loincloth, their stuff at cosplay. They're living their dream. So if they were in a Star Wars movie, that would be like a dream come true for them. Yeah, it would be like, you know, people who
the entire 501st.
Yeah.
So are you working on any new projects right now?
We are, yeah. We have a few projects in development.
Oh, a few.
Not Star Wars, but we have a few going.
You don't only do exclusively Star Wars is what you're saying?
No, no. Okay. That was another thing when this came out. People assumed that we were
that
just
Star
just
Wars
fans.
Uber Star
Wars
fans.
Yeah, they're just like
and that's
Star Wars fans breathe. Who are just kind of really good at this. But
no, they're as nerdy as you imagine. It's just not about Star Wars.
Yeah,
it's about film in general.
Yeah,
but
film in general.
They are that nerdy though.
But we kind of right away got.
How many inhalers do you own?
Too many.
One for every fanny pack for every day of the week.
Yeah, for every hour of the day. yeah, we have a few other projects going on. It's not Star Wars related. That Rebel Scum was really an inner nerd surge that just came to the surface. But yeah, that's what we're doing.
Is there anything you can talk about, or do you like to keep it kind of under wraps until you have your reveals?
We just have to keep it under wraps for now, because they're just in development, but more can be revealed. We do have a website. Our production company is Blood Brothers Cinema. You can find us on Facebook or our website, and that's probably the best way if people are interested.
And you have a YouTube channel.
And YouTube, yeah.
Where you can watch 2 million Rebel Scum.
To see Rebel Scum. If you haven't seen Rebel Scum,
What's your YouTube channel?
Blood Brothers Cinema.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Just search, probably even if you Google search you Rebel Scum, it'll come up.
It'll come up.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Anything else you want to plug there? Or is that about it?
Subscribe to this podcast. I'm sure you already do.
We're not holding him at blaster point to say that.
if you're a big fan of us and a big fan of Rebel Scum, in the comments you should write some special sort of Easter egg, like,
because then you know, yeah, you're like, you listen, and you
the Empire did nothing wrong. That's what you should write. The Empire did nothing wrong in the comments.
Make the Empire great again.
And we'll know where you're at. We'll know you're true. You got nerd cred.
Yep. Yeah, cool.
Well, thanks for joining us, Tim.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. It's been a pleasure. Yeah, it's fun.
Thanks for flying with us. We are interested to hear from you. You can reach us at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts, comments, or corrections. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating, review, and subscribe. You can also help us out through our Patreon at the Star Lores Podcast. Find us on Instagram, the Star Lores Podcast, on Facebook at the Star Lores Podcast, on Twitter at the Star Lores Podcast, and on YouTube, Star Lores Podcast. We'll catch you next time.